the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL Wire site, one of the USA Today NFL Wire sites covering the Arizona Cardinals. And episode 492 that we have this week is the second of our two preview shows as the Cardinals take on the Pittsburgh Steelers in Week 13 on the road. Seth Cox, my normal co-host, he and I did our regular just our own preview on that released on Friday. And this edition is with Mark Bergen, who is one of the hosts of the Believe in Steelers podcast. Mark, it's good to have you on. Nice to meet you. And thanks for coming on to talk Steelers and Cardinal Steelers.
Jess, I'm thrilled to be here, but I will say this. The next time we do this, let's meet in Paradise Valley, Arizona, the former estate of Cliff Kingsbury, and do this pool side. What do you say?
That would be incredibly fun indeed. That's just about a 35-minute drive from where I live, so heck yeah.
We'll put both of our budgets together and we'll make it happen.
And then we can take a classic photo as well to share on social media. It's not draft day during the pandemic, but I'm sure it would be quite the show. And man, nice to meet you. Mark, so you've been covering the Steelers for how long?
This is our fifth season that Ike and I have done the Believe in Steelers show. And it's crazy because, like, every time we talk, he teaches me something new about football. And I've been watching the sport almost my entire life.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic. And I've been doing the show now. My co-host is not a former NFL player, but he does coach it. He does scout it some. And, you know, he's 10 years younger than I am, so...
So there's still time is what you're telling me, Jess.
So, yeah, for sure. And I've been doing this for 10 years and still learning tons and tons. But so the Pittsburgh Steelers are a curious team. They finally outgained an opponent last week. They are such an interesting team. Rich traditions. But this is a different, like, even though some of the personnel is different now, it's still kind of a traditional Steelers team, isn't it?
You're very polite with some of the adjectives you use there, of curious. And in all seriousness, though, we're in a post-Matt Canada world now, and I found it absolutely hilarious that the very first game the Steelers have without him, they put up 400 yards, which they never did during his tenure as the offensive coordinator, which dates back to the 2021 season, Ben Roethlisberger's final year in the league. The very first game they do that. Now, if they do what they did last week against the Bengals, the points will come, and they did one of two things. They dominated time of possession and then moving the ball. And really, the big thing, how they've won, is takeaways defensively and then not turning the ball over offensively. And despite some of Kenny Pickett's shortcomings, that's one thing that you can say is that he doesn't really turn the ball over. So we'll see what it looks like in week two with Eddie Faulkner and Mike Sullivan kind of splitting up offensive coordinator and play calling responsibilities respectively. But that's kind of where you have to start, because the Steelers don't fire coaches midseason. They have not fired a head coach or coordinator before Matt Canada. You have to go back. We're talking World War I era in 1941. So you have to adapt with the times. You have to roll with the changes. I think from the top down, from the Rooneys to the general manager, Omar Khan, they realize you can't win with the style of football that you could 20 years ago of play dominant defense, dominate the line of scrimmage, run the ball down an opposing team's throats, not really turn over the ball offensively and get takeaways defensively. That to an extent, but with the changes of the league that favor offense, you have to adapt with the times. And hopefully last week was a step in the right direction of starting to do that.
Right. The 421 yards of offense, however, only 16 points. Was that a concern? Or is that just, like you said, a step in the right direction? It's like if week one with a different play caller, they're putting up the yards. Is there worry that that's all that is going to be? It's just going to be a more productive offense that doesn't produce more points.
Yeah, so last week's game, I think this is where you start to have the Deontay Johnson conversation because everyone's going crazy about his lack of effort, which might even be an understatement. I don't know where he was at mentally on Jaylen Warren's fumble, but the play before, Deontay Johnson had the opportunity to catch a touchdown pass and wasn't able to complete the catch. Very next play, Jaylen Warren's fumble happens. So if you get three there, if you get a touchdown there, you're talking about a bigger deficit. And late in the game, the Steelers did what they needed to do to make it a two-possession game and swear the clock was their friend. The thing and the silver lining I'm taking away from it is, yes, they finally outgained an opponent for the first time all season. It was only the third time that the Steelers had won time of possession in a game. But the thing I'm taking away from it, Jess, is this. It was the first time I've watched a game, and I can't tell you how long, where in the final 2 minutes of the game, I didn't have crazy anxiety of, oh my gosh, are they going to pull this out or are they going to blow this, to where they did what they were supposed to do. The game was well in hand. So you look at the 16-10 final and it's like, okay, only 16 points. Again, if they dominate time of possession and they get more than 400 yards of offense, the points will come. Chris Boswell, their kicker, has been extremely reliable. Only one missed field goal all season long. Hasn't missed an extra point either. I'd argue he's playing at a Pro Bowl level right now. But you look at Justin Tucker in the division, he gets most of the notoriety just because he should be forced to kick with his left foot inside 50 yards. He's pretty much automatic. So, you know, when the points are premium, what are the things that you can do to maximize your opportunities? And I think that's where you've got the two-headed monster with Najee Harris and Jaylen Warren, and both have been effective at times this season. So that has to be what you establish. That has to be your identity, and then you can play off of that.
Kenny Pickett, where is he at? Obviously, it's hard to tell what he is when he was running the offense that he was, but you see, in 11 games, 6 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. And I think I was on a radio show yesterday, and over the last – okay, I do see it. I just confirmed that. So over the last 6 games, 1 touchdown pass and no interceptions. Obviously, the no interceptions is fantastic. But is Kenny Pickett the guy? Is he the guy? And will he see – does he have the skill set that he's going to be more productive as the offensive system play calling changes?
Great question. And that's what we are going to find out, because now that Matt Canada is your scapegoat, if you will, and there's a lot of film out there of the predictability of this team's offense. If it's predictable to us as fans, people watching on television – what do you think it's like for opposing head coaches, defensive coordinators, players, position coaches, where you've got a full week to scout this? Now, that's not to absolve Kenny Pickett entirely. I look at it like he's in year 2. If you were to say you have to decide right now, would you pick up his fifth-year option? The answer would be no. The answer would be no. So here's what I think the Steelers will do moving forward, and here's what I would do if I'm Omar Khan, the general manager. After the season, you make sure that you get right with your offensive coordinator. You bring someone in there that can also be together and that's not going to get poached if you have a great season after 2024. So if you want to bring in another outside voice, which, remember, Matt Canada was under Randy Feuchner, the offensive coordinator before him, as the quarterback's coach. So I don't know what right now Eddie Faulkner, Mike Sullivan, what they could do to keep and retain their jobs in 2024. I don't really know the answer to that. But if you bring in an outside voice as the offense coordinator, it has to be your approach is get Kenny Pickett right in year 3 for when you spent the 20th pick on him. And then I would say, hey, Mitch Trubisky, thank you for your services. We have an out with your contract. We are paying you a premium to hold a clipboard. Let's re-sign Mason Rudolph on the cheap if he's either your second or third stringer. Go draft a rookie quarterback in the mid to late rounds. I see teams do this all the time. Jalen Hurts with the Eagles, they had Carson Wentz at the time. Brock Purdy with the 49ers, they moved off of Trey Lance. Dak Prescott with the Cowboys back in the day. I could go on and on and on and on. The new OC has to try to get Kenny Pickett right. If he's not the guy with the sample size of the rest of this season, next season, potentially year four, have someone else that you're developing behind him. And if he's too thin-skinned to where he's not cut out to handle that, he's not meant to be your franchise quarterback anyways. So that's how I would approach it in terms of right now he is the starter. You have to see what he can do on a rookie contract. Like, I would much rather see Kenny Pickett out there for the Steelers than Mitch Trubisky, who has 50-plus starts in this league. Yeah. But if I'm paying Mitch Trubisky a premium behind him, who can be another young quarterback that you can develop? Because, okay, look across the division. Deshaun Watson out for the rest of the season with the Browns. No, Joe Burrow out up for the rest of the season with the Bengals. You might need a capable backup anyways. So that's how I would approach it with Kenny Pickett. You hope it gets better in the coming weeks. The sum has to equal its parts with this offense. That was the baseline for the season because everyone's, they're 7-2 on the back half of the 2022 season. Sweet. That has to be where you start this year, not to where you regress and you go back to maybe even worse levels than what we saw a year ago because Deontay Johnson's been a Pro Bowler. Najee spent a first-round pick on. He's been a Pro Bowler, believe it or not, in his rookie year. Freiermuth, they finally decided to make him part of the play, the game plan last week. That's exciting. Allen Robinson's a veteran receiver who's proved himself. George Pickens makes a highlight catch all the time. So, like, you have the talent. Jaylen Warren runs hard. I'd go down the whole roster. But you have to put it together collectively. That's why Matt Canada doesn't have a job anymore. I'm rambling. Jess, I'm sorry.
No, it's all right. You've got both running backs over 540 yards. Najee with 598 and four touchdowns. Jaylen Warren with 542 and three touchdowns. Warren averaging 5.8 yards per carry. We'll talk the matchup, but does the offense start with that run game and then they use the run game to build and make plays down the field with guys like Pickens and Johnson?
It has to. And I think really since Broderick Jones got inserted into the starting lineup at right tackle, the rookie out of Georgia, your first round pick, a guy who the Steelers traded up for in the 2023 draft.
Athletic freak. Holy cow.
We call him a dancing polar bear, Jess, because his ability to get to the second level, and he's running after linebackers, DBs. A guy of his size shouldn't be able to move the way that he does.
I remember Thomas was like, when we were scouting, we're kind of looking at the draft stuff for the Cardinals last year. Thomas is a guy that just, Jones rather, that just stood out. Absolutely. The offensive line there at the top. Now, at the time, I thought Will Anderson was the, slam dunk, but trading down, training back up and getting Paris Johnson, I have no problem with that. But Broderick Jones was, where is he playing right now? Because I know that there was, like, he could play tackle, he could play guard. Where do they
He's
have
at right tackle. Right so tackle. What the Steelers did, eventually I think he will be the left tackle. Right now Dan Moore Jr. is holding that down. But both Dan Moore Jr., the starting left tackle right now, he's on a very cheap contract this season and next, who Broderick Jones took over for at the right tackle position, Chukwuma Okorafor. Apparently he said something that got him benched, but he's making like something like north of $10 million a year. So it's like, if he's not performing to the level that you want to and you have a first-round rookie on a rookie contract who's dominating the line of scrimmage and bringing an attitude to the running game, that's something that the Steelers have done since they inserted him into the starting lineup. So he's getting reps at the right side right now. And Jaylen Warren, when he's like leading the league in average yards per carry, he's been very effective. And then Najee, he had his probably coming off his best game, just short of 100 yards. He had a touchdown, ran very, very hard. You're going to need both this season. Everyone wants to make it of, which guy would you rather have? Yeah, Jaylen Warren's been the more effective runner. There's no doubt about it. But late in the season where this game's being played in Pittsburgh in the cold, November, December, January football, he's an absolute moose. He's not going to be a guy where 240 plus pounds that you want to bring down, that's not going to be fun for opposing defenders. So again, going back to what I said about Pickett, of would you pick up the fifth year option on Najee Harris? Probably not right now. But if Najee, if the contract negotiations get nasty beyond the season, if he goes out into the open market, he's going to see what the rest of the league sees, in that he's good between the tackles, but out in the open field, he just doesn't have a second gear. And so he needs to really focus on running north and south, because if he goes sideways, he could maybe get away with that when he's playing at Alabama, but the other athletes in the NFL, he's not going to get any yardage. So put your foot in the ground, get what you can, and you're going to need him to move the chains. And for Jaylen Warren to be effective as that spark out of the backfield when he gets his opportunities, and they really split time now, you're going to need Najee to help carry some of that load to where it just doesn't fall on Najee or Jaylen Warren. But for me, Jaylen Warren's been the better back with the ball in his hands. It's not just what my eyes are telling me. The stats back that too. But Steelers still have time because, again, Najee's still on a rookie deal right now. So it's a nice tandem to have. It's a nice problem to have for Pittsburgh.
We look on the defensive side of the ball. Obviously, you start with the impact of T.J. Watt, who you could argue is the best defensive player in the NFL right now. It would be hard to argue. You could argue other guys, but it's hard to say that there is anyone better than T.J. Watt. 13.5 sacks, an interception, broken up 6 passes, three forced fumbles, 25 quarterback hits, 12 tackles for loss. How does anyone play against T.J. Watt? And I don't know what the record is. I didn't look that up, but I know that the impact he has in terms of wins and losses for the Steelers is incredible. T.J. Watt not playing, Steelers not a very good team. T.J. Watt playing, and they win. They just win.
The Jenga piece, and you're exactly right. What I notice is this, because he's like a magnet to the football regardless of what you try to do in front of him. Double team, triple team, chip, help with the running back, what have you. He lines up against opposing teams' right tackles. Okay, so why is that? The Steelers actually don't move him around all that much. Most quarterbacks in the NFL are right-handed. So if you have an opposing defender consistently in your face,
they can see him the entire time.
So just naturally how a quarterback is facing. I also think that there's something to this, and I haven't gotten a straight answer from NFL people I've talked to, but I have a theory that when you talk about the top offensive tackles in football, traditionally you're talking about left tackles. And is there a talent discrepancy between left tackle and right tackle? Reason being, T.J. Watt can eat. Now, if you want to double and triple team him, you've got Cam Hayward, who is finally back healthy from an injury. Alex Highsmith's played at a very high level. The Steelers actually have some depth at edge rusher too, because when T.J. Watt or Highsmith need a blow, Marcus Golden's an established veteran who can come in. Nick Herbig, with his limited opportunities, seems like he gets a sack every other week, and he doesn't even play all that much. So going into the year, it looked like, oh man, if TJ or Alex Highsmith get hurt, or if they're down for a game or two, what are the Steelers going to do? Look, no one can replace TJ Watt, but it's actually a position of depth to where TJ can almost be a little bit more of like a designated hitter, to where he can be off for a series or a few plays, and then when you really need him late, he can have his legs fresh for when you need a dynamic play late in a game. And it's just his ability to consistently impact games and disrupt opposing offenses. I can't emphasize that enough. And like, this is no knock on his brother J.J. Watt, but I think he's might even be playing at a higher level. It's just going to be, you know, stacking the years up and the consistency of it all. But I was at the Pittsburgh Baltimore Ravens game earlier this season, and I went with my dad. And immediately after the game, my mom calls, "Oh, how's the game?" The very first thing he says is, "T.J. Watt was worth the price of admission alone." And it's week after week after week, yes, after week. He's making dynamic plays that influence the outcomes of games. It's I can't say enough good things about him. And again, yeah, we saw it last year with injury, where it's like this Steelers team with him versus the Steelers team without him. It's a night and day difference.
It is. Defensively, number one in takeaways. They are fifth in the league. They're top five in points allowed. They give up yards, though. 25th in yards allowed. And the Cardinals with this matchup, we'll talk the matchup. The Cardinals have to be able to run the ball. And the Steelers aren't great. They're not bad against the run. They average, I think, 4.3 yards per carry, almost 120 yards per game. Are there weaknesses to this defense? And what are the other strengths of it? They take the ball away. They have TJ Watt. What are the other pieces to that on defense?
So if I'm Arizona, here's how I'm attacking them, right? Elandon Roberts is now the team's leading tackler, but before a few weeks ago, you had Quan Alexander and Cole Holcomb also at the inside linebacker position. The Steelers run a 3-4, so they have two inside linebackers on the field typically. With Michael Walker, Mark Robinson getting into the mix, that's an area where I'd attack to say, make those young players beat us. Now, Cam Hayward up front, one of the most underrated defensive linemen in the game. Keanu Benton has played at a very high level, is well up front, and got a lot of reps and experience with Hayward out earlier this year. They can help pick up that void, but I'd attack the linebacker who just doesn't have as much game experience, whether it's Walker or whether it's Mark Robinson. And then on the outside, there have been games where the Steelers' corners haven't been very good. We love Joey Porter Jr. out of Penn State. We love the legacy.
That was one of the most, just like Pickett, honestly, but Porter to the Steelers felt inevitable, right?
Yeah. And we would have been fine with him at 17 initially. They trade up for Broderick Jones, and then they still wind up with Porter. He's really emerging onto his own of being a lockdown guy. Did his best against Jamar Chase. He didn't do much last week, and then also locked up DeAndre Hopkins earlier this season. But whether it's Patrick Peterson, he's finally starting to play a little bit better. But Pat Pete's maybe on the last year or two of his career. And then Levi Wallace has just been up and down this season. So that other cornerback, like Joey Porter Jr., his positioning is great. He blankets another receiver. There's times he'll win that battle. There's times the receiver will get the better of him. He's pretty good in coverage. But that other cornerback, I'd attack. But the guy you don't have to worry about, I don't think Micah Fitzpatrick's going to play again. We'll see. We're recording this on Thursday. But he's had a hamstring injury and been out the last several weeks. If 39 isn't on the field, that's a huge advantage to where if he is, you have to know where he is because he's an absolute ball hawk at the free safety center field position. If he's not out there, that gives any opposing offense, it can breathe a little bit of sigh of relief. So again, what I would do is attack the linebacker who doesn't have as much game experience due to injuries. And then in the secondary, I'd just say go opposite of wherever Joey Porter Jr. is. That other matchup you have to take advantage of. That's how I would approach it.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Steelhead podcast, the Pissar of Cardinals talking about, let's delve deeper into the matchup itself. Cardinals, Steelers, how do things measure up against each other? That's coming up next on Rise Up Steelhead. We're back on the Rise Up Steelhead podcast, the Pissar of Cardinals talk on the web, talking Steelers, Cardinals. The Cardinals haven't won in Pittsburgh. I just looked this up since 1969. They haven't beaten the Steelers, period, since 2007, Ken Wisenhunt's first year as head coach. Granted, the two teams rarely play each other three times in the regular season. Obviously, we remember the Super Bowl. Oh, that Super Bowl. But anyway, so looking at this game, you've talked about a couple of matchups, a couple of kind of keys to do that. How do you see James Conner's running style going with it kind of leads. So the one thing I give the Cardinals for this game, the things got out of hand very quickly last week because defensively they had no answer for the Rams and their offense. The Steelers' offense, obviously they're transitioning to the new play call because they haven't been able to put points up consistently. The Cardinals got their first drive touchdown, and then that was basically it until garbage time. If the Cardinals start well and don't fall a touchdown, two touchdowns behind, the ability to run the ball with James Conner is going to, I think, build that. Now, the rushing defensive numbers that the Steelers have, is that, what does that represent? They average 4.3, they give up 4.3 a carry, nearly 100. So they're very bottom, they're bottom half of the league in terms of rush defense. Is that an accurate representation statistically of what they are?
Yeah, it's a bend but don't break defense. And then it's not just the takeaways, but then not turning the ball over offensively. So yeah. Turnover margin, you win the turnover battle, you will win a lot of games in the league. I do have concern that James Conner going up against his former team. Remember, he played college football at Pitt as well. There's a lot of mutual respect there between the two. I know he has a lot of respect for the Steelers organization for giving him his first opportunity in the league. And Mike Tomlin also saying, hey, you know, we know he has a nose for the goal line. So if he's playing with something to prove and running hard, it is a genuine concern of mine, as almost like a revenge game where it's like, okay, you'd rather have Najee and Jaylen Warren than what I was, you know, giving you. Now, I will say this, when he was in Pittsburgh, his ability to stay healthy
still was the issue.
Yeah. And it's not a knock on his ability, but just his ability to stay on the field. You know, you're hunted when you're a running back. I mean, it's, you know, you're going to have collisions throughout the season that are like car crashes. But when he's at the top of his game, you saw it, what, 2 years back in 2021 when he was a Pro Bowler and scores 15 touchdowns. When he's at the top of his game, he's a top five, top 10 running back in the NFL.
Yeah, he's not like, you look at the running backs out there, you see Derrick Henry, the big, big names. James Conner's not, like, in terms of ability, isn't far from them. His issue is just, it's, you know, he runs with the style that, like, and here's the thing, like, that 2021 season, he wasn't particularly efficient. His last 2 years, he's been very efficient. He's been a better running back, but just has been a little bit less available. And he is the engine of the Cardinals offense. Kyler obviously is the driver. I have concerns in this game because last week, I think the most thing, like, Kyler looked really good in the game against Atlanta. He uncorked a few odd throws against Houston. And then his decision-making was very odd last week against the Rams.
Is he the Cardinals quarterback next year?
I am 100% certain of that because, honestly, there's no good way to go off of him, because if he's bad, who's going to trade for that contract? If they trade him, they're in a good spot draft and free agency-wise. If you move off of Kyler Murray, you've taken up more than half of your cap space that you have, which puts them in basically the same position with a rookie quarterback that you hope can be even as good as Kyler Murray. So last week's offense was just weird. There was an example of a 3rd-and-6 play when three different Cardinals receivers stopped and turned around 3 yards before the sticks with it. It was almost like, and I've been really firm that this team is not tanking. It felt like
NFL teams don't tank, but that's a whole nother discussion.
Right,
I'm sorry.
Right.
Go ahead.
I mean, you can't, like, coach and, you know, for a locker room, like, you can organizationally do it, but as a coaching staff that's preaching win, 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 compete, 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 if you go out there and give a bad game plan, that you lose a locker room real quick, and players don't believe in tanking. But it kind of looked like they weren't trying to win offensively last week, and so I kind of wonder about that. How the Cardinals offense, their pass rushers, their edge defenders have been pretty productive this year. They haven't gotten much in the last couple of weeks other than from rookie B.J. Ojulari. He's had 4 sacks in his last 5 games. They didn't have any sacks last week. How does that Steelers O-line hold up in pass protection?
So it has felt different since Broderick Jones has gotten more playing time. The one thing I would say about the Steelers line last season, and it's not that the line has been great, but they started and there's continuity there. So you have to develop a rhythm and understand how the guy next to you is going to perform and what he's going to do, because it's a collective, it's a unit. But Broderick Jones has been a huge difference because it's an attitude thing. And when I see him celebrating in the end zone after a touchdown, whether it's with Najee or Jalen Warren, there's an old slogan that the sideline tells the story. Like, there's not always a way to quantify that, but when there's just pure joy and an attitude and a nastiness up front, I think that's what Jones has brought to this line in, hey, that's going to be our identity. That's actually an area of strength, is let's add the tight ends to the mix. So Pat Freiermuth is going to be in his third game back from an injury. You draft Darnell Washington out of Georgia, Jones, college teammate at Georgia, also where George Pickens went to. They did that in college. Let's just do the same thing in Pittsburgh of it, front seven. Our front seven is going to be better than your front seven. Let's line up to where you know it's coming and you can't stop it. We're not coming through the back door. We're not doing cyber. We're not coming in through the roof. We're kicking down the door. So that has to be your mentality of that's what you're going to establish, and then what you can build and counter off that to where if an opposing team wants to stack the box to stop the run, hey, George Pickens or Deontay Johnson, that's your time to eat. Or if you want to stack George Pickens or Freiermuth, whether it's Deontay getting open underneath, that's been like the one consistent of maybe the last 5 years of the Steelers offense hasn't been that dynamic. He's a great route runner and can get open regardless of what kind of coverage you put against him based on his quickness. So that has to be where you build, is what the defense wants to take away. You kind of go in with the game plan of we want to establish the running game, but we have to see what the defense wants to take away and we can counter off that. I think we're starting to see it. I do need a bigger sample size with the new offensive leadership with the Steelers, though. Like, I don't want to say, well, all the problems are solved now that Matt Canada is no longer there and we don't see people chanting on College Game Day, fire Canada, right? So right. Need a bigger sample size.
So the Cardinals right now, so depleted defensively up front. They've given up some really big games. They gave up 122 to Tony Pollard. Christian McCaffrey was offensive player the week against them, ran for over 100 yards. Joe Mixon.
They're going to do that to a lot of teams, the 49ers.
Yeah, yes,
though,
yes, most certainly. Kyren Williams was a beast twice, ran for 158 in the first game, then got hurt, didn't play again till last week, and then put up over 200 yards of total offense last week. So with no Kaiser White, they're playing with a backup. They're playing with a backup Mike Backer. They're down three of their top four defensive linemen. That's a matchup that scares me. Now, how do you see the wide receiver matchup, how the Steelers match up with the Cardinals' corners? Last week, the Cardinals went with all rookies at cornerback, although it looks like undrafted rookie Star Thomas probably will be out. So you're looking at Garrett Williams' third-round pick, Keytrell Clark out of Louisville, fifth-round pick. They brought up a dude named Devon Wilson, who was on the practice squad, a guy who the Cardinals acquired, played for the Jaguars a little bit. But it might be Marco Wilson getting back in the lineup. He was benched last week. How do you see the Steelers receivers lining matching up against them?
Yeah, and I mean, that's your opportunity for the Cardinals. If you're the Steelers, like Deontay Johnson, if you want to shut your critics up, go ball out in this game, because the loss to Cleveland 2 weeks ago in a game where the Steelers cannot score, he's mad that he only has two catches. Then this last week, he drops a touchdown. And then I don't know if he was looking up at the scoreboard or at the sky, but like he was not there on the play after during Jalen Warren's fumble. And he said all the right things. He apologized to his team. He was accountable with media members this week saying, hey, this won't happen again. One play doesn't define my career. So make that a learning experience. But if you want to get back to a Pro Bowl level, you've got to do it on every play, and you've got to do it in a matchup where on paper, that's where Pittsburgh should dominate. I'm going to take George Pickens almost every time. They talk about 50-50 balls, and it's like, oh, well, it's 80-20 or 90-10 against this guy. With Pittsburgh and George Pickens, what I wanted to see this year is don't just throw him a go ball on third down and long when you need him to bail out your offense. Utilize him in ways and get him the football in ways other than just say, hey, we're running you on a nine route, play after play after play after play. And it's not that he can't do that, but just get him the ball more creatively. Now, if you want to line up one-on-one against Pat Freiermuth, the one thing Eddie Faulkner and Mike Sullivan established is we're going to get him 11 targets, 9 catches, excellent efficiency, a career high 120 yards. So over the middle of the field, which they did not do, they did not throw the ball over the middle with Matt Canada ever. I understand there's more defenders there, tips, interceptions, all of that. But if you're going up against a defense that's running a too high shell with safeties, the middle of the field right up the seam is where you got to attack. And if the defense doesn't take that away, that's where you attack. When they do take that away, then you can go to the outside and run the go ball to George Pickens. So again, whichever guy you want to take away, that's who the Steelers want to establish. And one other thing I've noticed with this offense as well. With Matt Canada, if they sent a player in motion, the moment he would cross the quarterback, if he's not getting the ball in an end round, the ball wouldn't go to that player. Last week, the Steelers finally make the adjustment to say, let's maybe throw the ball to the man in motion to see what happens. They'll run motion a lot of times to see what kind of coverage a defense is running. It makes sense to do that. But with Matt Canada, you knew where if the motion man didn't get the ball in an end round, the ball's not going there, and it's probably going to the opposite side. That was an adjustment I finally saw, and it was like 2.5 seasons with Matt Canada. It's like, again, if I'm watching this on television, I can only imagine what it's like as an opposing defense being licking your chops to where we know what's coming before it comes. And you listen to what players say, and opposing teams were like, yeah, we knew exactly what they were going to run before that they even ran it. So those are the things I want to see from the outside going against young corners. It's a great opportunity for those Cardinals players. But Deontay, if you're a Pro Bowler, prove it. George Pickens, if you want to be a star receiver in this league, you haven't had the production the last few weeks because the game plan, the game flow hasn't dictated that we need you to perform well. Here's your opportunity. Here's your opportunity.
Coming up next on the Res of Syria podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. One more segment. We're going to make predictions and picks. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Best of Cardinals talk on the web, talking to Mark Bergen from the Believe in Steelers podcast. Mark, we've got a game here. I think I can't feel that great about the Cardinals this week, especially if they are defensively anything they were. That run game might just demoralize them. But I don't know. Like, I still need to see it. I could see this going like the Cleveland Browns 27-0 game, but I don't think it'll be that bad because in that game they didn't have James Conner, they didn't have Kyler Murray, they didn't even have their undrafted rookie Amari DiMercato, who held up pretty well against the Ravens with 78 yards. That was horrifically bad. I don't think it'll be that way. I think this game's going to be a pretty ugly, low-scoring game. The radio host, who's a big Steelers fan, I was on the radio yesterday with, he says the Steelers often play, at least offensively, down to their opponent, which means they will grind out a win. It might feel like it's a close game, but it might not be a close game, even if it is numerically close. How do you see this game actually playing out?
Yeah, I'll go ahead and give you my score prediction now, if that's okay.
Sure.
I got the Steelers winning 24-17. Over-unders at 41.5. Steelers opened as a 6.5-point favorite. That's now down to 5.5. But I think you're reading this exactly right, where it's like points are a premium, it'll be tight, and then late in the game, the Steelers typically pull it out. And what do you want to call it? Cardiac Kenny Pickett or clutch Kenny Pickett or fourth quarter Kenny Pickett, whatever you want to call it. Late in games, typically he has delivered this season. I'm not saying he's Eli Manning, but it's like he does seem to morph into a different dude come fourth quarter and late games when you need him to make a play. Not all quarterbacks have the ability to do that. Again, we need a bigger sample size. I want to see what he can do with Eddie Faulkner, Mike Sullivan, if it's a new OC next year, you want to give him the benefit of the doubt for his development because, you know, one game with multiple touchdown passes, it's very ho-hum, but you hope that he can start to put it together and progress to say, okay, this is why the Steelers made him the 20th overall pick last season. So we'll see, but I think you're reading this exactly right with low scoring, who can win turnover battle, who can win time of possession, a game that's going to be in Pittsburgh too, so cold weather might be a bit of a factor too. It's a line of scrimmage game, who can block, who can tackle better. I mean, I hate to be meatball about it, but that's just the reality of the situation.
It really kind of goes that way, especially with this type of game. The Cardinals try to run the ball to establish things for the pass. The Steelers have a really good running game. I've got this game lower scoring. I have the Steelers covering, but the Cardinals will struggle, but probably pick up a late touchdown. And it might be one of the case where it's a two-score game and they get a garbage time touchdown. So I have the Steelers winning 20-13. And it'll probably be it'll be a case where they run the ball well and the Cardinals hold up as they get closer into the red zone. And so I see them combining probably for about 120 yards, Warren and Najee. I see the Cardinals doing a little bit offensively but not scoring points. Turnovers. How many turnovers, if we're saying 1.5 is the projected total turnovers, how many are there in the game and how did it split up?
I would take the over, and the Steelers have a lot of young DBs filling in because I mentioned the injury to Minka Fitzpatrick. Keanu Neal, one of your other starting safeties, has been out as well. You turn some of those drops into interceptions. I'll take the over, and I know Pickett hasn't thrown an interception in 7-8 games, something like that.
Which means he's due.
Probably due. Law of averages, right? I'd say the Steelers get 2 or 3 takeaways. Maybe the Cardinals get 1 or 2. That would probably be my guess. But when you look at it on paper, it's like, oh, statistically, how the heck have the Steelers won games?
Exactly.
They have been like the Vikings were last year. They eke out 1-score games. Now, that catches up with you in the long run to where you make the playoffs, you're probably not going to have much playoff success. Law of averages evens out. We're seeing what's happened to the Vikings this season. But that's how they've won, to where you look at it, it's like, this doesn't make sense. What it's been is the takeaways defensively and not turning the ball over offensively. That's how the Steelers have managed to squeak by and stumbled into what is a 7-4 record, because you look at the point differential of the other playoff teams, and it's like there's other teams that are up here, and the Steelers have a negative point differential. And it's like, wait a second, this doesn't make any sense. But that's been how is winning the turnover battle. That's been the biggest thing.
All right. So, Mark, we appreciate you. And so you are Mark Bergen _, just 1 underscore, on Twitter/X, right?
Yes, Twitter/X. And then it's a double_ on Instagram. For the kids, I know everyone watches YouTube. If you search Mark Bergen or Ike Taylor, we will pop up on YouTube. Believe in Steelers. That's BLEAV in Steelers. We will pop up as well. YouTube's probably the easiest way. We're on the streaming platforms, Apple, Spotify as well. But Jess, thank you so much for the opportunity to come on. And I'll say this too. Next time we do this, Paradise Valley, former estate of Cliff Kingsbury.
Absolutely. I won't turn that down. We'll find a way to make that happen. Definitely. That's Mark Bergen, guys. Thanks for listening. This is Jess Root. That's Mark Bergen. Thanks for listening as always. We'll be back next week. Seth and I will be talking about the Cardinals. Well, we'll see what happens on the game this weekend. Thanks for listening as always.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up, Sea Red.
Roll!